Aloha no, and welcome to Long Story Short on PBS Hawaii. I'm Leslie Wilcox. Last week, Pat Saiki recalled a time in Hawaii's history when there was bipartisan collaboration in the state legislature, instead of what she calls partisanship gone to the edge. A Republican, she served as a state lawmaker, U.S. Congresswoman, and head of the nation's Small Business Administration. More with Pat Saiki next.
Long Story Short with Leslie Wilcox, produced with Sony Technology, is Hawaii's first weekly television program produced and broadcast in HD. High definition, it's in Sony's DNA.
Pat Saiki, wife, mother of five, and public school teacher, entered politics in order to open doors for people, especially women and minorities. And though she was another kind of minority in Hawaii, a Republican, she was able to work across the political aisle to get laws changed. When collaboration failed, the former Hilo girl could be a fierce opponent.
Did you ever look at yourself as others might be seeing you, or did you do a lot of introspection that way, or did you just say, whatever, this is who I am?
That's right, exactly.
And you didn't, did you look for mentors or people who could show you by example, or?
There weren't any. You know, I hope that the women who follow after me will pursue their goals and find the success as I did. And like I said, my life was my children, though. I mean, throughout this whole thing, the five kids were raised well, I thought. And my husband was a big help. He was the kind of support that you don't see or get very often.
I've heard you credited for co-founding the Spouse Abuse Treatment Center.
Oh, yes.
Is that
sex
right?
Abuse, yes. You know, I have to give credit to my husband for this one. My husband was an obstetrician gynecologist, and he was involved as chief of staff at Kapi'olani Medical Center, and he knew about these cases of violent abuse of women for whatever reason. He wanted to give them help. If they were raped at that time, they were sent to the morgue to be, shall we say, examined by the pathologist in the morgue. He just didn't think that this was right. So he came home one day and he told me, you know, we've got to do something about these women who are being abused, these women who are suffering not only at the hands of their husbands, but at the hands of those people who really care less about the value of women, respect women. And so, he said, what do you think we can do? I said, well, you're at Kapi'olani Hospital. It's a medical hospital. It's a women's medical hospital. Isn't there something that you folks can do there at the hospital? I said, why don't you talk to Dick Davi, Richard Davi,
who was then the head of Kapi'olani.
Yeah,
right.
Kapi'olani. So he did. He chatted with Dick Davi, and then he came home and told me, you know, Dick Davi understands the need for this. We have to provide some place where women can feel safe, where women can come in and tell us their story, that they can be examined by physicians and be given the sympathy and the help with very sympathetic people. He says, but how are we going to do it? We need money. I said, that's when I come in. We'll see what we can do to add this program to the budget as an add-on.
And you're a Republican in the minority.
Oh, yes. Republican in the minority. But you see, it's very easy to tell the story of distressed women, or it could be these legislators' daughters, it could be their wives, it could be their aunts, it could be anybody close to them in their family. They understood. As long as you presented it to them on a personal basis, these legislators, whether they were Democrats or Republicans, understood the need.
Are you saying,
and they supported me.
Are you saying nobody did any horse trading, that they didn't say, well, I'll support that if you support this, but otherwise you're not going to get my vote on that one?
Not on this one. Not on this issue. You can horse trade on something else, but not on this one. This is an emotional issue, and there is no need to do any horse trading. And I made it personal to these people. They understood, so they funded it. and it became an add-on to the budget. Later, we wanted to include it as part of the health department's budget. And today, there is an organization that really promote the sex abuse center, and they've done their own fundraising, and they're making themselves more independent.
Back then is when rape victims stopped having to go to the morgue to be questioned.
Yes, can
and
you imagine
counseled?
That? I mean, 35, 40 years ago, that was it.
They weren't being counseled, actually, now that I think
no
about
counsel.
It. They were simply being, their statements were being taken.
That's right. And they were sent down to the morgue, and they were examined there, and the police went there and got the report, and that was it. So I think the Sex Abuse Center of today has done much to help the women who have been caught in this situation.
You know, being a Republican in Hawaii at the time, you were serving in the state house, in the minority in the state legislature. But on the other hand, you were a Republican in the time of Nixon, followed by Reagan, followed by George H.W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Did that help you?
Yes, I think so. Because I got good ideas from the national level as to what was available, and I could bring that home. And let's go back to Ronald Reagan, when we passed out of Congress the reparations bill.
For Japanese Americans?
For Japanese Americans who were interned during the war.
Did you have a personal connection with internees?
My uncle. Mm-hmm. My uncle and aunt. My uncle was an alien, and he worked for a cracker company in Hilo. And he ran also a taxi company. He left those businesses in the hands of my father because he was taken away and shipped out to Topaz, Utah. My cousins then had to go up to Topaz and be interned with their parents. So till today, I have a cousin. We call him Topaz. But this reparations bill has been sitting in the Congress for years and years and years, and Republicans were especially hesitant about passing a reparations bill for a minority group until I got elected. I got elected to Congress, went into the Republican caucus room, and I said, "What the heck are you guys doing? Do you know what this means? Do you know how it happened? Do you know why it happened? And I'm going to lay on the biggest guilt trip you ever had, and I want you to pay attention because I'm going to do it now." And I laid it out to them. Newt Gingrich, all of these people were there at the time.
This is when
you were a
brand new fledgling congresswoman.
Freshman. Who pays attention to freshman congresswoman? But Hawaii never had a Republican in the Congress, so my Republican colleagues paid attention. If I could make it through this state, I must have something that I could share with them, which is what I did, and laid it out on the reparations bill, and I got their vote. And so the bill passed the Congress, and then we had to deal with President Reagan. Is he going to sign? Is he not going to sign? And the White House people called me and said, "I think he's going to need a little nudging here." So I went down to the White House and talked with the president. And I'm not saying that I did it. You know, I'm not claiming that, but I'm saying that maybe I helped move it along.
Well, what did he say? Was he aware of the issue when you spoke with
him?
Yes,
he was aware of the issue, but he had to think twice, he said, about giving reparations to one segment of the population. There are many, many others who have been discriminated against for one reason or another and so forth. And he had his arguments, but in the final analysis, he did sign it. So I'm proud of that, because I feel the Japanese Americans who were interned, it happened so unfairly, unjustifiably.
Former President George H.W. Bush said this about Pat Saiki: "She's an effective, compassionate leader whose voice gets heard, who makes things happen." The first President Bush appointed Pat Saiki to head the U.S. Small Business Administration. That after she gave up her congressional seat to make a run for U.S. Senate against Dan Akaka and lost. She served two terms in Congress.
I got to see you in Washington, D.C. when you were the fledgling congresswoman. What was, how would you describe how you carried yourself? I mean, you had a big learning curve. Anybody who enters Congress does. But were you feisty? Were you statesmanlike? Well, how did you handle yourself?
Well, I don't know how people looked at me, except that they knew this was a strange kid from Hawaii, the little island in Hawaii, Oriental. They called me a freshman person who needed to be trained, you know. And I bowed my head and I said, yes, I'm here to learn.
Because seniority is considered everything.
Seniority is considered everything. And I'm here to learn, so I need for you to teach me. And I think I could work with those people. And we got a lot of things done. It's amazing how much was done with this kind of attitude where you don't strut around and say, well, hey, I'm the new kid on the block and, you know, I'm going to show you a thing or two. Instead it was, I'm here to learn. Teach me and we can share things. But.
And did you like that job? Did you want to stay in office for quite some time? It seems like everybody who runs for the Hill wants to stay forever. Did you want to stay in the House for longer than you did?
No.
You ran for Senate?
Yes. The House is made up of 435 people. In order for you to get anything done, you have to deal with 434 people. And you have to do it every 2 years while running a campaign. And I had to run here every 2 years. And it's a struggle. I wanted to go in the Senate, where at least you had 6 years, and you had only 100 bodies there. You had to deal with only 99. I figured the math is for the Senate. And the opportunity came, of course, unfortunately, when Senator Matsunaga died. Mm-hmm. And so I felt, and my husband did too. He says, look, you're not in this game, this political game, for any self-aggrandizement or motivation. You're here to do a job, and you have to do what you think. You have to do it the way you think you can, and do it most effectively. So if you feel that you want to run for the Senate, hey, run. If you win, you win. If you lose, you lose. You haven't lost anything.
Although you had a pretty sure thing hanging on your, you would have hung on to your congressional job.
Well, So I was told by my Republican colleagues who wanted me to stay. But, you know, life is too short. You have to do what you feel you have to. And so that's another reason that I decided to go for the Senate.
So you launch yourself into a Senate race against one of the most beloved men in Hawaii, Daniel Akaka.
Yes. Danny is an honorable man, no question about it. But when Matsunaga died and created that opening, I felt that I should go for it. So after discussion with my husband and the campaign people, I decided that I would make a run for it. Well, it also caught the attention of the White House. And this is now George H.W. Bush. He called me and asked for me to come down to the White House. He had something to discuss.
Was that a kick when he called you, or was that just sort of life on Capitol
Hill? It's always a kick when the President of the United States calls you. And it, you know, makes you, well, you gotta go.
You don't say, oh, I'm busy.
No, you can't say, we'll make an appointment. No, so I did go down to the White House, and George Bush was very interested in my running for the United States Senate race. And I said, well, yes, but it's going to be a tough race because Hawaii is a Democrat state. And Senator Akaka, who is now the incumbent because he was appointed to that position by Cayetano.
These jobs just don't come up very often.
They don't come up very often. And it's going to be a tough race. So I am thinking it over. I'm looking at possibly running. He says, well, is there anything I can do? Well, yes, Mr. President, there is something you can do. What is it? I said, well, the first thing you have to do is stop the bombing of Kaho'olawe. He says, Kaho'o what? He calls in John Sununu, who was chief of staff. He says, John, come in here. Now, Pat, will you spell this out? Kaho'olawe. I did. I did for John Sununu. And I said, Mr. President, it's very simple. I did my research, and the bombing was permitted by executive order of the president. Therefore, the president can rescind the executive order, and the bombing can stop. It's part of the RIMPAC exercises.
And the military desperately wanted that island because it was a great place to target
to
bomb
yes.
practice.
But I explained to him the dangers of the continued bombing, how our state has populated, how the tourist industry has grown, especially on Maui. And when the bombs hit Kaho'olawe, the windows shake in Lahaina and in the whole island. And one day, a bomb is going to go astray, Mr. President, and I don't think you want to be responsible for that. I think it's time for us to return that island, a sacred island, to the Hawaiian people. They have wanted that island back because it is a place where they pray and they have their history of that island. So he says, the president says, well, I don't see why we can't do this. We'll have to tell the Navy to go find someplace else to bomb. Well, it didn't take 2 months. I called up Hannibal Tavares. Remember Hannibal Tavares?
The mayor of Maui County.
That's right. And he was a chair of the Save Kaho'olawe project.
And there was a group, lots of folks who've been fighting the target bombing for a couple decades at that
decades,
point.
Decades. And I don't know if they ever did their research to find out that it was a presidential order. Because it would not have been that difficult, I think, except maybe they're all Democrats and we had a Republican president, but Hannibal was a Republican. So I called Hannibal and I said, here, this is the news, we'll see what happens. 2 months later, John Sununu called me and said, the president just rescinded the order. I said, where are you going to bomb? He says, well, I don't know yet, but that's up to the Navy.
And that was, at that point, were you were already in a fight for Senate with Daniel Akaka?
No, it was at that point that I determined that I would run.
And you had something to hang your hat on
yeah,
as far as I got the president to do this.
I thought so.
That was a tough race.
It was a tough race because Dan is so beloved, you know, and he's one person that you really don't want to defeat. And although I ran
it must have been hard attacking him. Because he is so genuinely nice.
Yes, I couldn't attack him.
But you did very well when you launched. You were ahead in the polls.
It was circumstantial. It was the year when the president had said, read my lips, no new taxes. And he went back on that word, and everything began to crumble after that.
We also saw excellent Democratic feet on the ground.
Oh, absolutely.
Helping,
the marchers came
Akaka.
Out. Yes, the unions came out, the marchers came out, they got their act together. And although I was doing real well in the polls and everything, I was defeated. And it was an honorable defeat. It was an honorable try. I don't regret it at all. And I'm glad that Dan Akaka is still healthy and well and working hard for us.
You've always been for the Akaka bill, haven't you? Are you surprised it has not gone anywhere, not far enough anyway?
Well, no, I'm not surprised because of the way the voting is going on there. I mean, it's so partisan and it's caught up in that whole mishmash of emotional bills. And this one has, of course, all kinds of nuances.
Pat Saiki has been able to make her voice heard and make things happen, especially for women and minorities. She's a political veteran and risk taker who's quite familiar with both victory and defeat.
You've won some big races. You've lost a couple of big ones.
Big ones, yes.
The Senate one was a big one, and then the race for governor was
a big one.
Yeah,
was a big one, right.
What was that like?
Oh, that was tough. That was a real tough race because it was a three-way race between Cayetano,
And Fosse jumped
Frank
in.
Frank Fosse jumped in, myself. And Cayetano won, but he did not win with a huge majority of the vote. And Fosse leaked off quite a few of my votes. And that's the way the cookie crumbles, I guess. It was one of those things. I don't know if the state was ready for a woman governor at that point. Hopefully they are now, because they elected Linda Lingle after that, and she was re-elected after that.
Do you feel it was a timing thing?
Politics is all timing. Everything about politics is timing. It's who you run against, when you run. It's like this Kirk Caldwell situation with the office of the clerk. And when he resigned his House seat, and when he got his papers ready for the Senate race, and all of that. I mean, it's all a matter of timing. It's if Ann Kobayashi had announced earlier, if this and that, if it could have been different.
And but you say you don't have any regrets. It must be hard when you don't really have control over these elements and these factors that can completely bash your chances.
Well, I go back and I reflect on the times when I was in charge, like when I was the head of the SBA.
Okay, this happened after, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So I lost the race for the Senate, and George Bush, the president, called me at home and asked me to come back to Washington and
take How many times did the president call you?
Do you know I got a call from President Reagan, who wanted me to go, and I did, to the Contras in Nicaragua. I took that flight because he asked me to. George H.W. Bush wanted to talk to me about the Senate race. And he also called me after the race was lost and asked me to head up the SBA.
And were you the first Asian to ever head a federal agency?
Yes. And the first one from Hawaii, too.
And a woman at that.
And a woman at that. And I loved it. It was wonderful. There you are. You're heading up this agency. You've got 4,000 employees. You've got a $6 billion loan capability. You have almost a $400 million budget. And you can direct things. You can get things moving.
Did you enjoy that more than politics? Although I know there are politics in those high-level government jobs, but did you miss the elective politics?
No, at that point, I sank everything into this job. I had to fight with Dick Cheney at one point. He was the Secretary of Defense, and I wanted that 10% of all federal contracts in the Defense Department to come to small business. And he was a little hesitant about that, but he finally gave in, and so 10% of all federal contracts had to be referred to minorities. And so we had to control all of that and make sure that truly they were minority corporations. And
lots more accountability as the head of an agency than in a place with 435 votes.
That's right. That's a different job. You know, you go out and you try to get the votes to support your stances. In this other case, you have to be responsible and prove that what you're doing is right. Remember when we had Hurricane Andrew in Florida and Hurricane Iniki within a couple of months? Mm-hmm. Iniki was in Hawaii. I got a call from the White House. They said, Pat, this is your state. Your state is going to be in the middle of this huge hurricane. I think you'd better get over there right away. So I handled that and tried to get loans for those people on Kauai. And but you're in charge, you know. So it was a different experience, but it was enjoyable. It was fun. I'm glad I did it.
And why did you leave it?
Well, I had to.
Change in
Clinton came in. Remember,
okay, that's
George
right.
H.
So there's no way you're going to say,
no.
Excuse me, Mr. President,
no,
I'm
no.
a Republican, but I
no. We
really
all
like
had to turn
job.
In our resignations at that point. So after that, I came home.
All right, and then I'm sure a lot of folks said, Pat, I'm glad you're back, because we want you to do this. Will you run for that? And what about that?
Yeah, but you know, I feel like I've done my job. I've done my duty. I enjoyed every minute of it. I hope that I contributed something that's worthwhile. And I think I have, with help from a lot of people, Democrats and Republicans.
Is there something you would have done differently? No regrets.
No regrets at all. And so today I sit on the Board of Governors of the East-West Center, which is an institution that I really believe in. I helped to move it along in its early stages when it was developing. And I have another cause, and that is to try to get help for the elderly, for those who are in need. I took care of my father, who died 2 years ago. He lived with me. I took care of him at home. That's when I found out that we need to have home care. People want to stay home when they get old. They don't want to be stuck in an institution at the costs that are exorbitant. And so we have to find ways to give them the kind of life that they deserve after they've worked so hard.
Excuse me, but that sounds kind of like a stump speech.
No, it isn't.
You've ruled out politics.
I've ruled out politics, but I play politics from a different position now. I'm trying to influence people to think like I do and think ahead, because the biggest tsunami that's going to hit this state yet is the elderly, the care of the elderly. People are getting older, and we're not ready.
Pat Saiki went from Hilo to Honolulu to Washington, D.C., always a change agent. Now she's set her sights on improving Hawaii elder care. From her record, we know that her voice can be calm, persuasive, collaborative, and it can get feisty, even fierce. I'll be listening for her voice in the elder care debate. Mahalo to Pat Saiki and to you for joining me for this Long Story Short. I'm Leslie Wilcox of PBS Hawaii. Ahui ho kako.
Long Story Short with Leslie Wilcox is produced in HD by PBS Hawaii with Sony Technology. High definition. It's in Sony's DNA.
I just have one more thing to ask. You know, I got to see you in your office in Congress on Capitol Hill, did a couple of news reports about you then. And then many years later, after you retired, and I think you were taking care of your father at the time, you had a girls' night out, and you and some women friends were at the Blaisdell watching a show, and I was sitting, I think, in the seat, the row in front of you, and you guys were having a ball. You were passing around kakimochi and
lihimoi.
And you said, hey, Leslie, you want some? You just looked like you were having a great time.
Oh, I do. I did, and I still do.